This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We go immediately to the news from Ethiopia. Locked in a civil war, several sides here, so we'll stay to the headlines right now. BBC reporting. Ethiopia war, World Heritage Site Lalibela back in rebel hands. Reportedly no exchange of fire as the town, a UN World Heritage Site, swapped hands. At the same time, we have another headline. This is coming from Reuters. Witnesses say Tigrayan forces in Ethiopia retook Lalibela. These significant headlines also lead to other questions from the UN about the civil war. For example, the UN is failing its Tigrayan peacekeeping troops. This is from the Africa report. Also from the UN, witnesses say Tigrayan forces in Ethiopia retook Lalibela. In other words, there's a convergence on this World Heritage Site, Lalibela. Gregory Copley has guided me to understand that this is a war that is very fluid. The Ethiopian government, led by Prime Minister Abiy, launched an offensive some days past, pushing the Tigrayan Popular Liberation Front, which is the rebel unit, back in Amhara territory. Now we have headlines saying that the TPLF has retaken a large, significant town. The situation remains fluid. How to understand the fall of Lalibela? Gregory, a very good evening to you. It is a World Heritage Site. You tell me these are the stone churches carved out of the rocks. What is the military significance of this town? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, the military significance of Lalibela is that it is an iconic pilgrimage site for all Ethiopians, because it is so magnificent and sacred. These churches were ostensibly carved by as a result of a vision by King Lalibela during the Middle Ages, and they are spectacular. They do attract huge amounts of tourists to the Amhara region of Ethiopia. So it's a significant sign of dominance over Amhara symbols and culture, if you like, by the TPLF. And the TPLF has often felt very, or the Tigrayans have often felt very competitive with the Amhara, and the leadership of the Solomonic line of Ethiopian rule has vacillated over the years between Tigrayan dominated and Amhara dominated. So there's a sense of competitiveness there, but the reality is that the Amhara, seen as, if you like, the more orthodox, more established leadership of a unified Ethiopia, also scares the Oromo population in some elements of it. So the Oromo-led present government of Ethiopia under Prime Minister Abiy have been reluctant to allow the Amhara region militia any support in resisting the TPLF. As a result, vast areas of the Amhara region and the neighboring Afar region, which is a Somali region, have been laid waste by the TPLF and not really opposed by the National Defense Force. Now, yes, the Ethiopian National Defense Force under Prime Minister Abiy is regaining the initiative. They pushed the TPLF out of Lalibela a couple of weeks ago, and they somehow couldn't sustain that. So the TPLF was able to walk back into Lalibela a few days ago. Whether it will hold it is debatable. Frankly, the national forces, National Defense Force, is pushing the TPLF back into Tigray region itself and is already threatening the TPLF's capital, Mekele, in the Tigray region. So essentially, the government has regained the initiative to a large degree, and it's done so by finally, if you like, getting its act together to push through the Amhara region and to save Amhara region and the Afar region. And it's been using a lot of new technology, particularly unmanned combat aerial vehicles, UCAVs or drones. And these have been provided by the People's Republic of China, by Iran, and by Turkey. And for the government of Ethiopia to take these weapons from the PRC, Iran, and Turkey has meant a great compromise of principles for Prime Minister Abiy, who basically turned his back on Beijing when he took office in 2018 in order to show support for the United States. How the United States actually, under the Biden administration, has betrayed that and has supported the TPLF, an old client, ally, if you like, of the Obama administration.
Gregory, you've named a number of geopolitical powers here with hands in this conflict. You named China, Turkey, certainly a dominant player. We're told that drones from Turkey are everywhere in Eurasia now. You've mentioned the U.S., and then we have Europeans watching closely, hence the BBC headline. Can we line up these factions? It looks like a fluid battlefield. Who is supporting the TPLF? Where is the money coming from for the soldiers or for their weapons?
Well, the TPLF and its tactical ally at the moment, the Oromo Liberation Front, have been getting a lot of military aid and training from outside. The TPLF has consistently had support from the Obama administration when it was in office and got a lot of money from the U.S. The TPLF, which is ultra-left Marxist organization, Stalinist organization, had its militia, the TPLF militia, 30,000 strong or so, trained by the United States States Army and equipped by the U.S., and they were given a huge amount of money, billions of dollars, by the U.S., in exchange for the U.S. being able to access some air bases in southern Ethiopia at the time that the TPLF controlled the Ethiopian government. So those TPLF leaders were all given U.S. passports, as well as a lot of cash. Most of them have homes in the United States. And so as a result, when this whole crisis started to erupt again, when the TPLF lost power in 2018, went back to the Bush, in a sense, and they were started to fight a guerrilla war against the new government, even though the new government has a genuinely constitutional and democratic mandate to rule. The TPLF has taken the war back to them and has had the support of the Biden administration, largely because the Biden State Department has people who were in the Clinton and Obama administrations and see the TPLF as their old, if you like, client allies. So essentially, the U.S. has been working with the TPLF to run a very, very well-funded international information warfare campaign under which allegations of malfeasance have been leveled against the government, genuinely and generally saying that the government was responsible for atrocities which the TPLF had committed. And we saw that sort of thing happening during the Clinton administration and its support for both the Croatian government and the Bosnia-Herzegovina Islamist government during the breakup of Yugoslavia. And we're seeing the same language, the same approach to, if you like, inciting a political consensus globally in favor of what the State Department wants. And frankly, it's hard to see where the U.S. interests actually align with what is being undertaken here.
No permanent interests, no permanent foes, no permanent friends, but permanent interests, yes. But what are the interests when you're not doing well? From the reporting, Lalibela did not fall to a TPLF offensive. It was emptied by the authorities, and the authorities are making progress against the TPLF. So at this point, whatever the propaganda is, it appears that Prime Minister Abiy has money, and he's using that money to launch the drone warfare, and the drone warfare is successful. That would suggest that the State Department's loyalties are misplaced, or they're going to have to reconsider. Is that possible now? You know, they want to be with the winner, not the loser.
Well, that's absolutely the case. And in fact, there's no clear case for U.S. interests by supporting the TPLF, which is a radical genocidal operation. I mean, they're specifically genocidal. They want to kill all Amharas. I mean, this is quite a statement.
So are we ready to, is the U.S. ready to switch sides? Because you named Turkey, And China, I can guess that Russia is going to eventually show up. And I believe Iran is also owning its drones. Those are three frenemy adversaries of the U.S. Does the U.S. want to line up on the other side of China and Turkey in Ethiopia? And that's not a good look, Gregory. Not at all.
Well, no. And the Russians have taken the lead in supporting Ethiopia as well. They've stopped the UN Security Council from imposing, if you like, constraints on Ethiopia and in demanding that Ethiopia take peacekeeping forces led by the US. So Russia and China have used their veto powers there to save Ethiopia. And this is an Ethiopia under Abiy is a country which said it wants to be an ally of the United States.
Right.
And it's a democratically elected government. So Tony Blinken at the State Department has lost the momentum. He failed to get support from the other African states to build a consensus against Ethiopia. Basically, they've got a UN hearing on human rights coming up on Friday, which is ostensibly to talk about intervention in Ethiopia. But the reality is that that will get vetoed again in the Security Council. So really, the U.S. has failed comprehensively in this and has basically destabilized the Horn of Africa by supporting this war. And it has not done anything to stop Ethiopia reviving again as a united country with Eritrea, with Djibouti, in becoming a revived Red Sea power. Now, this doesn't sit well with Cairo, and the United States wishes to support Cairo in controlling the Suez Red Sea sea lane. But the reality is they cannot do it by alienating Ethiopia. That's going to have to be resolved, and it's not being resolved by this insane, haphazard client relationship which the U.S. has with a Marxist terrorist organization, the TPLF.
Too many villains, too little time. I'm Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to Equatorial Guinea on the West African coast, and questions to be answered about China's intentions in the Atlantic. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.